welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Klug, joined, as always, in this new year with Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, we have lots of New Year's business to unpack and attend to. But before we do that, I want to talk about something that's going to be a thing only for the month of January. And that is you can get tickets to Live in Louisville 2 for only $10. So at the end of the month of January, there's going to be a little bump up in price. We've already sold a lot of tickets for that event, and we don't want anyone to be left out. So, Pipe, tell them a little bit more about the events, specific dates, places, decadence that will be a part of the event, and they will want to race to Eventbrite to get their tickets. So tell us about that, Pipe.
Yeah, so the event will be April 10th. It is the night before T4G. So we're calling it T4R, Ooh. Together for the Rant. So this is a way to actually lift your spirits before you go listen to 32 straight hours of sermons by dudes in suits. So this
is the same dude you listen to year round on the internet,
right? The same guys you listen to year round, but now you get to listen to them in a big arena that's named after Mediocre Chicken in Louisville, Kentucky, which is where our event will be. We will be.
It's called like the Yum Yum Place, right?
Yeah, what is it called? The Yum Center.
The Yum Center.
Yeah.
Judas, I love that.
It is where Rick Pitino coached basketball before he was ignominiously fired for all sorts of scandalous things. And so I guess
the great Rick Pitino.
So yeah, where else can you find, you know, Al Mohler and Rick Pitino sharing a stage?
I love it.
So our event will be the night before all of that. It will be at the Sojourn East campus, the same place we did Live in Louisville in October. We'll be in the larger room. So I don't think we'll have the John Calvin bust in the room, although maybe we can move it just for the sake of
– I would love to get it moved. Let's put that on the rider pipe.
All right. We're putting it in the rider. We need –
Where are we going to be in relationship to the woodworking alcove that we had there before? With the saws and the stumps,
just down the hall. It'll still. I mean, assuming they haven't swapped it out for, you know, like distressed leather. I would assume that we can still do a photo shoot there. And
gosh, I love Sojourn. Maybe some metalwork too. Some metallurgy.
Yeah, I mean there was plenty of that last time. So yes, tickets will be $10 through the end of January, and then they will jump to $15. So if you are planning to come or planning to bring a group of people, now would be the time to get those tickets, because I mean that's a significant discount off of what it will be. We will be sure that there is sheet cake there. We will be sure that there is Happy Rant gear there from Missional Wear. We will be sure that there is Lagaris Roasters coffee there, all for purchase and to drink, similar to last time. And I'm sure that Ted and Ronnie and I will all bring some various goods and materials to sell of our own writing and recording. Absolutely. As we did last time as well. So April 10th in the evening, I think we have it, from 8 to 11, I think is the time. If you go to happyrantpodcast.com, you can find all the details. It's all listed right there. Tickets are available through Eventbrite. $10 through the end of January. Jump on it.
And it'll just be a stone's throw, Pipe, again, from our Airbnb in the meatpacking district of Louisville, which was just a quick 35-minute jaunt around the corner.
I will be at Together for the Gospel in a professional capacity, which means I will be staying at a more probably professional hotel establishment as opposed
to – interesting.
Although the old Airbnb with the bedroom and the dining room was kind of cool. So
that was very cool.
I will kind of miss it.
Kind of cool that it was like courtesy of Substance Church too, boys. Let's not look a gift horse in the mouth, shall we?
Only the best for Substance.
Touche.
You actually bought that abandoned meatpacking plant, and are you going to make Substance South in Louis?
I may or may not, but I don't know if you guys are going to want to be there after the just mountain loads of complaining you've done about it. By the way, I have a book about that too.
I actually love the 70s bowling alley motif. That would be next level hipster church. You know what I mean? I feel like the meatpacking plant is kind of passe. I feel like 70s bowling alley is the new meatpacking plant.
Or skating rink.
Dude, a skating rink from the 80s.
The roller skating rink? Because I mean, those are like – I feel like there's just abandoned skating rinks everywhere. So
absolutely. Everybody could put on skates and kind of just drift around as the worship and the service happens.
The Hokey Pokey could be the call to worship or something.
That's right. You have to play some Wham, like Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. I feel like that was a great like 80s roller skating song. Oh, this is good, Pipe. This is good. I'm sure That's real estate you can get for a song.
2018 so Sojourn, Church Trends. Here we go.
Yeah, if the Sojourn brass is listening, I think this is the future. You know, we're futurists. We've said it. Pipe. Another thing that is the future, and another thing that's very 2018 for this program, is that we now have a Patreon. What's the nomenclature here? I think it's
Patreon, which is like okay. Patron, meaning yeah. people who pay my bills, which is sort of the point of the whole thing.
It is. So tell us about that, Pipe. Tell us about what we're trying to accomplish vis-a-vis Patreon.
Yeah, so Patreon is a place where people who like content that is put out by various creative people, so podcasters, writers, filmmakers, can go on and essentially support the work financially. Usually there is some sort of, you know, if you sponsor or donate at a certain level, you get something in return, which we are offering as well. So we have three different levels where people can come in and help support us financially. The point of it is not for us to make money. We talk a lot about how much money we make on this show. And because we need to explain all of our jokes, as we discussed several episodes ago, that's a lie. Mm-hmm. We don't make a lot
yes,
of money
it is.
Through
this
show.
That's correct.
We barely pay our bills through this show and occasionally have some money left over to go out to dinner or something like that. So this is a way for you as a listener, if you like what we do, to participate in helping us pay for production costs, put on the live event, and probably spin off some additional episodes as time goes on, which again has some additional cost to it because we'd like to do some additional bonus episodes. Ted and I
Rant Sports is launching.
That's right.
In 2018,
Happy Rant Sports will be launching where Ted and I can talk sports without causing Ronnie's ears to bleed.
First, I'm hearing about this, BTW.
Well, I'm sorry. Did you want to be part of the conversations about Happy Rant Sports?
Carry on, Pipe.
So,
dude, there's tension. There's creative differences within the group. I love this.
Yes. Well, it's the kind of thing where he wanted to be involved in knowing about it but not actually doing it, and that was an oversight on my part.
I think that's pretty correct.
Poor,
but carry on.
Poor decision-making on my part to not notify Ronnie that there was a thing going on that he doesn't care about. So,
dude, this big corporate monster that we're a part of called the Happy Rant, I mean, there's still real people with real feelings.
You know,
that's the thing. You lose sight of that, you know?
Yeah, when you get as big as we are, it's hard for the communication channels to filter all the way to all the necessary parties.
Absolutely.
So, again, if you go to happyrantpodcast.com, where you can find all of our episodes and our Ligaris Roasters coffee and our live event, you can also find a link to the Patreon page. And really anything that you can subscribe to donate on a monthly basis is helpful, whether it's a dollar or $25 or whatever. You'll see the details listed there. There's some free books involved. There's some free coffee involved, depending on what you're willing to do. But we would appreciate any support just to help us cover our costs and expand the program. We're not looking to get rich because we've made our millions, and so this is just a matter of covering our costs.
This is a hobby.
That's right.
Corporate jet in 2019. We'll split it three ways. That's the only responsible thing to do. I would feel excessive if I just had one for myself.
Yeah, know? that's a little much.
It is. It's a bit much. But boys, it is 2018. This is the season for New Year's resolutions, and I want to talk a little bit about that later. But I want to start with a little bit of a different twist on it. I want to talk about New Year's revelations. So I want each of us to reveal something to the audience about ourselves, and this could be something that we've learned that we're going to be like working on or thinking about in 2018. But just a New Year's revelation for the group. And I guess I can start. And this ties into my disdain for Christmas, which I'm sad to report didn't necessarily change this year, but I think I figured out what the issue is for me. And it's I'm gonna go real like reformed guy here. In that the reformed guy way to deal with anything is to like, you know, figure out what the sin is and then obsess over it to the point of misery. But I think I realized that like my deal with Christmas is like, I want very badly to manage everyone's emotions such that, you know, they all have this wonderful experience. And of course you can't do that because in doing that, you want to be God yourself. So, I think this was the year that I finally like identified that that was a thing, and hopefully Christmas 2018 will be a much easier ride for Big T. So that's my New Year's revelation. Also, I'm writing a journalism textbook, which I'm really pumped about. So that'll be coming in 2018, which is kind of fun. But
how does one write a textbook? Like,
explain that, baby.
That sounds that just sounds overwhelming to me.
Dude, it's really fun, actually. So I got approached by a textbook publisher, Kendall Hunt, and they asked me if I wanted to.
Sounds like a reality TV star.
Dude, yeah, exactly. Kendall Hunt. I wish that was my name. They asked me if I wanted to do a journalism textbook for this kind of entry level, 100 level journalism class that I write. And we talked back and forth quite a bit, and I realized I wanted to do one book that would cover all the classes that I teach in journalism. So being that I hate textbooks, and my students all hate textbooks too, I think that's kind of a universal college student thing where you take a fairly simple concept and you bloviate about it for 400 pages in a way that's dry and awful, and that nobody even wants to like take the plastic off their book and read it. So I'm doing like a narrative journalism textbook. So it's going to be kind of part story, part instruction. It's going to be short, so like 200-250 pages, and I'm pretty pumped about it, man. I've started, and I'm having a blast with it, so that'll be coming in 2018, and it's the kind of thing that Kendall Hunt envisions my students using it, obviously, but then maybe it being something that could be marketed and sold to other Christian college journalism programs. So totally wow. Different, man, totally different kind of writing for me, but I'm having a blast with it so far. So yeah, that's the deal, man. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, what about you, Big R? New Year's revelations. Christmas is over. How are you doing emotionally? Is there like an emotional dip for you after Christmas?
Yeah, this day especially has been a low one for me. So yeah, I'm coping right now.
How do you cope? What does that look like?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a good question. I think one of the reveals for me would be that I need to find a way to cope with post-Christmas depression, which I like to, refer to as
PCD.
PCD, yeah.
It's real.
And it's a real thing. Yeah. And I don't know. This has been an interesting year for me. I think it's one of those years that it's been a reflective year for me, and I want to continue with the reflection going into 2018. I want to be a little more. I want to be a little more reflective than I was in 2017.
What are you reflecting on, baby? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, I think for me, and at the risk of this turning into Reform Pubcast, which is feeling a lot like right now for 2018, and maybe there's a need for Reform Pubcast to come back as the Happy Rant, which that's going to be the end of the Happy Rant for me, but personally, and maybe now that it's going into Happy Rant Sports, maybe that's a self-fulfilling prophecy for me anyway. But
just going a little different direction.
Just kind of, this will be the end of Big R in the rant, but that's another discussion off the air. But I think, I don't even know what we were talking about. So
what you're reflecting on, baby? You said you wanted to get all reflective, and it just whetted our appetites for knowing what it is that you're going to be reflecting about.
I guess if I knew what I was going to be reflecting, I wouldn't have to be reflective about it at this point. So I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, it's deep. Interesting. It's deep.
You just want to reflect. You just know that reflection is going to be part of
you. I just know that that's something I want to be a part of me, that's been a part of me, that I want to continue to be a part of me, if that makes any sense.
It doesn't, but I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And Pipe, does it make sense to you? As you reflect on what Ron has said about his reflection, does it make sense?
In sort of like an inceptionary sort of way, where it's like reflecting on reflecting about reflecting on who knows what. So, I mean, no.
So it's very Reformed Pubcast. Yeah, I think it works.
No, that's not Reformed Pubcast. Reformed Pubcast wants to have answers for everything. I'm saying like
– That's true.
I don't have answers for anything. I don't want to have answers for anything. I'm going into 2018 blank slating it. That's what I'm trying.
So it's very Emergent Village circa 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure about the
questions are the narrative, is the identity. Good.
No, because I don't use those kind of like – I don't use that highfalutin language. Like
that kind of fruity language.
Yes, like identity and stuff. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't use big words like identity, guys. I mean, exactly. Who are we talking about right now?
Yeah. What did we go to Harvard?
You know, I'm just a simple guy trying to make his way in the world, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm just a simple guy, you know?
Yeah.
Not like you guys.
Right? Ron Martin, simple
stuff.
Guy. Yeah, exactly. Well, we're talking about high concept.
I'm not all into technicalities like you guys are talking about, like first down and stuff, or like like what Belichick's going to be doing, you know, with the New Orleans Saints, you know, this year. Like I don't know. I'm not that complicated.
You know,
I don't
know. Ronnie, it's a little late to be trying out for the Happy Rant Sports podcast, but you're doing a bang up job. I'm impressed.
Exactly. This is like an audition.
Oh, because you guys are talking serious about it, and I don't even know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, I want to bring it back down to the Anaheim Rams and what happened with Pat Hayden back in 78. I mean, that's going to mean something to me. That's what's going to mean something to me, guys.
Vince Ferragamo.
You know, my favorite thing about this is that Ronnie is successfully proving that he both knows nothing about sports and dropping just name after name in this perfect sequence.
Dude, dropping the Pat Hayden reference from the late 70s is
just
cool.
Does Pat Hayden mean anything to you, Big T?
Pat Hayden means a ton to me.
What does it mean to you? When I say Pat Hayden, what's the first thing that comes into your mind?
Dude, when you say Pat Hayden to me, it tells me that you have a much deeper and more significant understanding of Southern California sports, not just the Dodgers, but USC, UCLA, the Anaheim Los Angeles Rams of the late 70s. There's a lot there. And you start peeling back the layers and you realize that might just be the tip of the 80s, 70s Rams iceberg, as it were.
Look, man, I don't know anything you just said, but when I say Pat Hayden to me is the Ron Say of football.
Fascinating. In what way?
Wasn't he just kind of a little guy that just kind of didn't do that well, but he was on a team that, you know,
well? Yeah. Pat Hayden had this like highly decorated college career, right? Like No, he was a college superstar, but you're right in saying that he was a little bit undersized, didn't really fit the paradigm for the pros. He was on some good Rams teams, but he wasn't the centerpiece. You know what I mean? Like other people were the show. So in that way, he was a lot like Ron Say.
All right, this is turning into Happy Rant Sports. We've got to move on.
It really is. It's incredible, though. I'm enjoying it, and I hope you're enjoying it.
Ronnie,
I think you are.
Your contribution was amazing. I mean, you just created that segment out of thin air. That was magic.
I think that was his revelation.
Well, I'm a creative. That's the only thing I know that I don't have to reflect on is that I'm a creative. So
yeah, forget about the reflecting nonsense. This was all about the Pat Hayden reference to me. It was all building toward that. And Pipe, what about you? What's your New Year's revelation?
Well, let me unpubcast this thing. Realized Ronnie just did a really good job of unpubcasting it, and I'll just continue. My revelation is that with the recent passing of one R.C. Sproul,
dude,
I realized I've never read an R.C. Sproul book.
Wow. No and kidding.
I never.
Are you even really reformed?
Well, that's what I mean by unpubcasting this thing. Apparently that's in question. I've never read an R.C. Sproul book. I was given, what is it, The Holiness of God? Is that sort of seminal work?
That's the magnum opus. That's the Desiring God.
It's his Desiring God or his Knowing God. It's The Holiness of God. Yeah.
It's his The Curious Christian.
Old white dudes writing about God. Yeah. Got it.
It's his The Bridezilla of Christ.
I think that is the most accurate thing that's been said literally so far in this program.
You know, it's the Pat Hayden of his, you know, book collection.
Yeah. I was given that book for a high school graduation present, and I kept it out of guilt for about 15 years before I put it in I slipped it into like the free books pile at work. Working at a publisher, you occasionally walk by tables where people are like, here's some books that I've been sent. And I was like, here's some books that I've been sent 15 years ago as a gift. and I never read it. So that's my revelation in terms of a confession. So not real introspective as much as just sort of it's causing me to be introspective because of the question you guys asked, which is, am I really reformed? I don't know. Can you be reformed and not read R.C. Sproul?
Mm. Interesting.
I mean, can you be reformed? Can you not be reformed and be on this podcast? I mean, I think we kind of brought that up, and we did live in Louisville for that one guy that was there, the one solitary guy that raised his hand when I said, "Who here is not reformed?" And he raised his hand, and that caused a lot of controversy.
Dude, the courage on that guy.
I think there was a couple other people there who weren't. That guy was the courageous one.
Yeah, he really was. Boys, can I ask you a follow-up question vis-a-vis Sproul? The question is this. So when Sproul died a couple of weeks ago now, I got all these texts from people, like these condolence texts. Like, you know, Sproul, yeah, like Sproul's gone, you know, kind of thing. And
like, what are you going to do, Ted? What are you going to do?
Like, what are you going to do? And it's like I told KK, my wife, I was like, this is weird because – like Sproul wasn't my dad or my grandpa, and like I never met him, and like I read one of his books and I liked it, but you know what I'm saying? Like it wasn't, I didn't know how to respond to these people. Like I took it harder when Walter Payton died 15 years ago or whenever that was, you know?
I mean, this is going to really offend somebody, but I took it harder when Barry Sanders retired from the NFL.
Oh dude. Yeah. That was big, you know, and obviously Sproul's passing is big, but he was an older guy. He had this great life and this great career. And I don't know, you know, and obviously you're sad when like when somebody dies. But it didn't sort of touch me personally, I guess. And I was unsure as to how to respond.
What did you guys have texted, Ted? Like flesh that out a little bit, man. Like who texted you and what did they say?
Dude, more than one. So like a handful of reformed people, and sometimes it would be like a Sproul, gosh, meme is the wrong word to use in this context, but that's the only thing I can think of where there's like a picture,
the picture quote thing,
the picture quote thing, and then with the years that he was alive, like, you know, 1948 to 2017 or whatever it was. They would send me that, and There was nothing I could think of, and I'm a writer. Like, we're all writers. We're all word guys on this program. But I couldn't think of necessarily anything appropriate to say in response. You know what I mean? Like,
so what did you just say? Like, I'm sorry?
No, I just kind of didn't respond, you know? I don't know, which is probably
worse. Yeah, if you don't have, like, a sincere, heartfelt response, you just kind of come off as really callous.
Dude, because like, when Payton died
– it's like, okay.
Yeah. When Payton died, or even when like Barry Sanders retired, you can reminisce about like, I loved it when, you know, he did whatever. And you know, with Sproul, it was like, I never met the guy personally. Like we never hung out. I don't know.
You can reminisce about that time, like in your bedroom when you were reading Holiness of God. Like you couldn't conjure memory from that.
I couldn't reminisce about that one. No.
Yeah. No, Pipe definitely couldn't.
And, my feeling about his death was a different one, which is so it hit my dad pretty hard when he passed, you know, because Sproul was influential to him. They are two kind of old guard in the reformed community. Sproul even a little bit older than my dad, but what it caused me to think about was, you know, you see this public outpouring of, you know, we've lost a great one. And then there's like the private family side, which is, you know, like they have to process this as the loss of a father or a grandfather.
Sure. Kid,
which is while also seeing all of this, like, I've lost my spiritual father on Twitter, which is an interesting thing. And so it that was kind of where my mind was in it, was just sort of looking at it from the outside, going, the family is processing this dramatically differently than like the public reformed sphere of the world, who is, you know, deifying him and glorifying him and bemoaning his loss and so on. Generally, in very, you know, they're really praising him, but
yeah.
But the family, you know, they're the ones who, like, they had arguments and they had family issues and they had, like, they loved him in a very different way. So for me, it was more that, also looking ahead in a semi-morbid fashion, realizing my dad's 70, almost 2, and, like, that's, you know, it's going to be the same thing in hopefully many, many years when he passes. So different perspective for me, but not – it didn't – no personal sort of, like – feeling on it.
Yeah. Interesting, boys. Well, Sproul was a man of letters. He was a writer. We're all three writers. I want to talk about something that does come up at the end of any year, and it's people giving their, you know, favorite books of 2017, or these are the best books that I read in 2017. I want to go a little anti. I want to go the other way. I want to talk about books or a book that you didn't read or didn't finish in 2017. So either something you started and didn't finish, or just something you avoided altogether for whatever reason. So, Pipe, you work in the book industry. Let's start with you.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, the list of books I didn't read is nearly infinite. But I read almost no Christian books. Maybe I read no Christian books that were recommended to me.
Interesting.
You know, in terms of like books on lists and books that I was sent by publishers and those kinds of things. I've gotten to a point where when like the reformed hive mind says this book is the most important book on whatever, I kind of don't care. Yeah. And I only read books that I'm interested in and read no books out of obligation.
Good for you, man. That's the way it should be. I love that.
But it's, you know, but I would say it's only been the last couple of years when I finally gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't need to read Keller's latest book. Now, I love Tim Keller's books, but he started to put out too many for me to keep up with. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to read them out of obligation. I can read the ones that I'm like, that one's interesting. So working through his book, his devotional on the Psalms, great. Not really interested in some of his other books. So that I would say the books I didn't read were sort of the reformed hive mind recommendations, which are, you know, they're the ones that end up on like the Gospel Coalition's book list and Desiring God's end of year book list and every blogger's book list. Cause I'm like, they didn't scratch where I itch. So I didn't read them.
There you go. Big R, what about you? What's a book that you either started and didn't finish or just avoided altogether for some reason?
Yeah. So I've been being told to read Hillbilly Elegy now for the last – well, it's only been out a couple of years, but I was – you know, it dropped. It was hyped. Everybody read it, and I just – I don't know. I finally got around to it this year, and I got about – probably about halfway through it. I was – it just bummed me out so bad, and just with every page and with every chapter, I would just – I felt myself just sort of like descending into this sort of like hillbilly funk over it, and I finally
thing with memoir. It's got to be like – gut-wrenchingly awful. It's kind of like, it's like watching an art film, you know, the most like dysfunctional, awful relationships you can imagine. And that's what makes it art.
I know, it's so weird.
Or music by white guys with guitars.
That too.
Exactly.
And I've gotten that way about a lot of things like that, where it's like, if I get in a little ways and I find myself, if I find it affecting my emotions negatively, it's like, dude, there's nothing here that says I have to finish this. And so
I'm with you, because real life is hard enough. Right. I mean, you got enough like going on in your real life that you don't need to like necessarily enter into the author's misery with him. Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I can understand why people loved it, because it gives you a lot of like it gives you the mindset and some facts that, it, you know, so for that, it was like, no, I get that. It's important. So it's not saying that it wasn't a worthy work, but it was affecting me in a way that I didn't feel like being affected. So I let it go.
See, that's so interesting to me, because when I read that book, like, it had almost no emotional effect on me. Because the story was so dramatically different than mine. You know, I didn't feel like it wasn't hitting me close to home or whatever. Sure. For me, it was understanding others, kind of understanding a whole collection of people in our country that I didn't get. And so it was, I call it more analytical, but just sort of like, oh, that is why this group of people thinks the way they do about so many things. Mm-hmm. And so it had a dramatically different effect, but I can totally like – I resonate with what you're saying, why, you know, about reading something, and if you just don't like it, or if it's just bumming you out, just quit.
Right.
There's no there's no obligation to continue.
There's no time. You might as well move to something that's
life sucks enough to be bummed out by something that you're voluntarily putting yourself through.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of the great things about being an adult. You know, nobody's got a gun to your head making you read these books like for school or whatever. So you can just bail on them.
Yeah,
it's a real empowering feeling.
You have to read and write and watch what you want. I just don't feel like that there's – I mean, you can't apply that to every aspect of life, right? Because we all do stuff that we're all not super stoked about, and we have to do that constantly.
But we do those things because there's a purpose to it. Like, I hate exercising, but I like being healthy. And so like the fact that it sucks has a – there's a benefit to it. Whereas like reading a book that you think is crappy, there's no benefit to that. You're just wasting your time and your emotions.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Big R, you took mine, man. Mine was Hillbilly Elegy as well.
Was it really, man?
Dude, that's it was. And dude, yeah, it's interesting because we run in the same circles, baby. You know, so I think all the same types of people that were excited about that in your kind of life were – probably the same types of people that were super pumped about it in mine. And I think people thought I would love it because it was, you know, memoir created nonfiction. And I realized, I think everything that I read in 2017 that wasn't Christian was fiction. I just read a ton of fiction in 2017 and a ton of good fiction, that I was really excited about, but yeah, kind of similar to you, Big R. I think I had to read like a glut of super depressing creative nonfiction for grad school such that, you know, reading about just the awful lives and awful families of people I kind of got my fill of that, I guess, in the MFA. So,
I don't know. That's fascinating to me, though. That's fascinating because this is what I'm curious about. Here's my question for you. Because I was told, because I'm doing the whole small town church thing, that would be helpful to read it. And parts of it were, I get it. I mean, were people like, were they dishing it to you because you grew up in like small town Indiana? And they were like, no, man, you need to sort of like, you know, kind of bring this thing home. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of that, but it was more like, you know, this is just really like, you know, great creative nonfiction or whatever, which I'm fine with. Like I will probably eventually read it.
Well, I think he's a writer. I thought he was a great writer.
There
was
nothing, and that's what I hear.
It wasn't a judgment on the book itself or the writing. I thought he was really good.
Ronnie,
having grown up in
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Pipe. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Ronnie, do you think that you would have found it more beneficial if you had read it, what, 6-7 years ago before moving to small town Ohio to plant a church? So moving, like changing context, whereas you've been in it for a while. So you read it, and I have to imagine it's a different experience because it might not be quite the revelation it is for those of us who live and – you know, work in different circles than that.
No, that's a really great question. I think there's some elements to it that really are dark and depressing, actually. And I think it kind of confronted me with some of those things that I think I'm surrounded by, but I'm not directly engaged in. And so it hit a little bit close to home with that. I think if I would have read it like 8 or 9 years ago, I think it would have just freaked me out, to be quite honest.
Interesting. Dude, let me ask you this about it. And actually, you didn't finish. Pipe, you did finish Hillbilly Elegy. I wondered, and not to get all, again, reformed pub, was there any glimmer of, like, redemptiveness about it at all? Because a lot of the memoirs that I read in grad school were just straight up, like, total depravity. And there was no sort of created in God's image to balance it out. And I wondered if this one... like if it had little cracks, little glimmers of redemption through it at all.
The guy who wrote it came out on the other side through time in the military and then getting into, you know, getting into, I think it was either Harvard or Yale grad school or law school, and is a successful professional. So he kind of lives with his foot in this, you know, sort of upper crust white collar world and his roots in this other world. And so, redemptive in the perspective of like the change and his observations. I also thought his observations on it were call them redemptive because he was trying to sort through what was good about his upbringing and what was despicable and then what was good about where he is now and what was not. So he kind of, cause he entered into this new world as an outsider, this world of privilege and education. And, you know, he talks about, you know, going to people's houses, which were nothing like the homes around where he grew up, you know, when he was in grad school and, you know, they have like butlers and stuff. So it's, there's this, those things were redemptive in sort of a revelatory way and his manner of processing them. So he didn't come down real heavy handed, like my upbringing was trash and I hate everything, or I hate white rich people, but just sort of the distinction between them. And I thought that was beneficial and good. He wrote with a tone that showed love to the people in his life. So even the people who you look at and you're like, that's a crazy person with all sorts of problems, Mm-hmm. He cared about them very clearly. And so I think all of those things were positives about it. The context was really dark.
But you're right though, man. He had a ton of there was a ton of love that he was writing from the perspective of, which I thought was really good. Yeah, it was really good. It was really confusing because what Pipe just said is so spot on. On one hand, it was dark, but on the other hand, he wrote about it with so much love and affection. There was sort of this positive sort of aspect to it. So it was kind of this dual natured thing, I think. But
yeah. Interesting. Boys, we have time for one more topic, and the topic is this. What is one resolution that you wish reformdom would make and keep in 2018? So if the reformed world could have one resolution in 2018 that they would make and keep, what would it be? Big R, I'm going to start with you, resident man of the cloth.
Oh, dude. I wish that they would expand their grasp within the tribe that they have created a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, flesh that out, baby. That sounds interesting.
Well, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, just in terms of, you know, things like, you know, the people that they value, the conferences that they put on. I wish that they've kind of found their fraternity a little bit, and I wish they would sort of loose – you know, loosen the straps on that a little bit and let it go a little bit wider.
Mm.
That's something that I think that would be beneficial to all sort of involved, you know, very deeply within, you know, these organizations or these movements. And even, you know, as you sort of, you know, fall to the outer rim of these things, I think it would just be really beneficial so that it doesn't continue to become, you know, so that it doesn't remain, you know, as narrow, I think,
yeah.
I think it is. But I don't know if that makes any sense. But
dude, I'm kind of hung up on this reform guys as frat boys mental picture that you – did you said fraternities? And I'm just thinking –
Yeah.
I'm thinking of all these guys as like fratty dudes, the different archetypes. And I'm having a lot of fun with
that. Well, it's just like everybody loves everybody, right? But everybody loves who's in the particular – you know, who's in the particular house. And so it's like any frat situation. It's really hard for people kind of coming in to sort of get their foot or their elbow or their finger into the whole sitch. You know, so to me, it's like I'm not speaking about from this even personally. I'm just saying like there is a narrowness to it. There is a sort of a celebrate ourselves, a self-congratulatory aspect of it that I think if they allow this to just continue, they could sort of narrow themselves out of the things that they're pushing.
Dude,
that are actually good, you know.
I'm actually really glad you mentioned that. So I have a really dear friend, probably my closest friend who isn't my wife, and you know, he's a pastor. He's going through, you know, kind of a career move within his pastoral career, and he was interviewing with a church, and you know, this guy to me is everything great about Reformed theology without sort of the trappings of the Reformed culture. And I love him for that. But so he was going through this interview process, and it was clear to him sort of the Reformed initiation kind of answers that he was supposed to make, and sort of the gospel-y talk and the right authors that he's supposed to name drop. And, you know, because he's, you know, who he is, he wasn't ready to fully celebrate that brand. And it was an interesting process for him of realizing, okay, there are the right things to say, and I'm not exactly willing to say them. And I think that strikes at the heart of what you're talking about, Big R, which is, you know, it's not unlike fraternity initiation where, you know, you kind of wear the right clothes and jump through the right hoops and talk about the right things. And then you're a boy. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Very interesting. Pipe, what about you? Resolution you wish reformdom would make and keep for 2018?
Yeah, it might be – it probably overlaps with what Ronnie said in terms of how it would play out. But I wish – see if I could articulate this. I wish that they would take being reformed and move it way down the list of things by which they identify themselves.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know, because so not saying anything about their theological convictions, not asking for people to stop being or believing what they believe, but rather there are so many barriers put up by the labels of being reformed and evangelical. Whether it's boundaries between white people and minorities, whether it's boundaries between progressive Christians and, you know, conservative Christians, you know, a couple of us, you and I, Ted, work in a Southern Baptist context, and being Calvinist in this context is also a very divisive issue.
Sure.
And so there's just like there are so many ways to be a reformed person without wearing it like a jersey, you know, and the other thing is that the more you wear it like a jersey, in my observation, the less you are living out the convictions you claim to have.
Because, but don't you think wearing it like a jersey is sort of the exciting part for a lot of people? Because I think people want to wear jerseys. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it's which kind of goes with the frat boy thing or like the rube bro thing. Like when I see a grown man wearing an NFL jersey, I immediately have opinions about what kind of person that is. You know, like unless you're at a game, like wear your jersey when you're at T4G. That's your game. Like your team is playing. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right. Your team is playing in the Yum Center.
But like when you're not, put your jersey away because that's a rube way to live. It's a ridiculous way to live. And it kind of like in sports, you know, if a Tennessee fan sees an Alabama fan wearing a jersey, like they're not going to be friends even if they have everything in common aside from the jersey color. So whereas if they were just wearing like t-shirts, it'd be fine. And so it's that kind of thing. And so I think the barrier of wearing your reformed, like if everybody would just take reformed out of their Twitter bios and then lose some of like the weirdo language and those kinds of things, I think it would go a long way towards allowing other people to hear what you are saying and stop distracting you from what other people are saying as well. And this is not sort of a can't we all just get along, because the answer is no.
Sure.
People disagree.
Right.
But we can disagree for better reasons than you being a reformed rube.
Mm. Yeah, that's good, man. I think mine is similar to you guys in that and this is really – this is wacky and conceptual and it would never happen. But mine is what if all of reformedom just didn't write or say anything about reformedom for an entire year?
What would we podcast about?
Well, that's the thing. Like I think it would be really interesting if all of us like as a tribe or whatever just didn't talk about it for like a year. You know, and we spent that time doing other things, whether it's
– Should we try to do that as a podcast?
Not talk about reform stuff for a whole year?
Yeah, like what – I mean
– It would be interesting. It would be a really interesting fun experience.
I mean obviously Together for the Rant would be a little tough because –
That would be tough. That's
we're at our reformed Super Bowl trying not to talk about the Super Bowl, but I don't know. What do you think, Ron?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this is even a topic, I mean, I feel like we're the only three people that have brought this up as even a topic within our tribe. That's what so part of it is like it's like, well, should we not even bring it up as a topic for us to be critical about or to riff about or to have an opinion about? I think we come at it from such the opposite angle that for us to not bring it up, I mean, that's kind of one of the platforms that we sort of established here is that you are allowed to talk about it in a funny way, in a way that sounds divisive, but at the same time, we consider ourselves in it. And so there's a beauty to that that I would hate to lose, but I don't disagree with it, you know, offhand. You know, it's interesting, you know, and again, like, when we do T4R, part of the fun of it is to make fun of it while being in it. There's something so much more funny about something that you can make fun of while not disavowing it at all. And I love that.
Dude, we'll be in it and we'll be acknowledging that, you know, we filled the big room at Sojourn East because of the fact that the Reform Super Bowl is happening 10 minutes down the street, you know. Interesting. Boys, this has been a lot of fun, man. I missed you guys. Not to get all sappy. I missed doing radio. You know, I think I was just I was just born, we were born to do this, you guys.
It's in your blood.
This is really what our lives were building toward all these years was the radio business. So it was good to be back. Good to be back in studio, back in the saddle. We have wandered to and fro throughout this program. Until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.